Because at the end of the way, are you really there for your kids if you feel like shit all the time? Are you really being like the best spouse you can be if you don't feel good? But like, I think when we really spend that time to take care of like us, we then have the capability to really be there in the best way possible for the people around us. Time's not related is your currency.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to the Eat Green, Make Green podcast. This is Pat McCauley, as always. My guest this week is the fabulous Bailey Ruskus, or as she's better known as across social media and the internet, Chef Bay. Chef Bay is a holistic nutritionist, a best-selling author of the book Cook, Heal, Go Vegan, and the host of the Plant Remedy podcast, which is an awesome show that I recommend. You can watch it on YouTube as well. I'll leave links to that in the show notes. So we talk about how a classically trained chef shifted to cooking only plants, her battle with endometriosis and how she's managed it with diet and lifestyle, the positives and negatives of birth control, why you must be your own health advocate and not rely on one type of health professional, how cooking can change your life, the energetic impact of consuming animals and dairy, and her tips on growing a personal brand. Really interesting stuff, especially on the endometriosis front. I will let Chef Bay tell the rest. Again, I'll leave links to everything she's doing in the show notes. Highly encourage you follow her, especially on Instagram and TikTok for incredible content and videos. Without further ado, the one and only Chef Bay. Time's not related is your currency. All right, Bailey, welcome to the show. It's a pleasure to connect with you. I've been checking out all your social media and everything you do over the past few weeks since we first connected. And just super excited to dive in and learn more about your story.
Yeah, thanks so much. I'm so excited to be here. Like any podcast to talk about like plant-based food, I'm always down. So let's do it.
Absolutely. So my first question is, I know, are a classically trained chef. Mm-hmm. I imagine that did not involve plant-based cooking of any kind. So when did like the shift happen? Was it after cooking school? Was it during? How did all that take place?
Yeah. So, I mean, vegan was literally never on my radar ever. I grew up in Colorado. So like I grew up in Boulder, Colorado. So I grew up with like the crunchy moms, you know, just all over everywhere. And like, I grew up with the idea of veganism, but I am Polish. So my grandparents are Polish immigrants. And so I was raised on like sausages and like American food and Polish food and all that stuff. And I also worked really young in a pastry kitchen, and like pastry is the opposite of vegan traditionally. It's just like tons of butter and cream and like all that stuff. And so when I went to culinary school, I remember like everything was so meat heavy. Like we had like our butcher class, which I was so proud that I had like the record in the school, which I think about now and I'm just like, it's so crazy to think about the changes that we go through, you know.
And, what was the record for?
It was like how quickly you could like butcher certain animals into like their cuts.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So they would do like a whole pig, a half lamb, a whole chicken. Like I was so impressed with myself that I could do a whole chicken in 30 seconds. And I think back at that now of how disconnected I was to like what I was actually doing, you know? So yeah, that was my culinary school experience. It was like very meat and dairy heavy. You know, everything had pork belly. Like, I swear to God, I think about the recipes now and everything was like, you started with pork belly and butter, like pretty much everything, which is so crazy. So I remember one of my last classes though was a whole food plant-based class that was also like salt-free and oil-free. And all of my classmates and I were just, and it was run by this Indian woman. Her name was Chef Anita, and she was like so healthy and so vibrant. And she was just like so different than all of the other teachers that we had. And it was like one of the most challenging classes for me because, you know, no oil, no salt as like a French culinary student. I was also really young at the time. So I was like 20 when I was ending, started culinary school when I was 18. I ended around 20, 21. And that definitely like opened my mind to like, wow, using like beans and lentils and like things that just in general aren't in French cooking, like tomatillos and like really using like all different kinds of citrus. And we would do that in a way that was, you know, connected with heavy fat, you know, so you would make like a sauce that you would mix lemon and shallot and like mainly butter with, but it wasn't using these other ingredients to kind of create these flavors. And so that was my first really like big opening experience to vegan food. And I remember I like aced my final and I was so proud of myself because none of my other classmates did well on their final. And everyone was like, this is stupid. Like veganism is so ridiculous. But so that was kind of my intro. And then I started private chefing. So I was working in kitchens, like in restaurants, but I also started my own private chef business. And that lasted for a long time. I still private chef now. It's been like 12 years. So it's been like a long time going. But I didn't actually end up going vegan until my health journey kind of like ruined my life. And I ended up moving back home with my parents. And I kind of went back to school for nutrition. And I just had to figure something else out because this chef lifestyle and like the partying lifestyle living in San Francisco just wasn't working for me anymore. And so that's when I started to really learn about like our food system. I started to learn about like factory farms. And it's ironic to think, you know, I spent $100,000 for my culinary degree and I like never learned any of this stuff. I never learned about glyphosate. I never learned about really the conditions of factory farms. You know, I think it was like we grazed on it from more of like a volume perspective and talking about like prices of meat and stuff like that, but we didn't really talk about it from like an ethical perspective and really looking at, you know, also from a disease perspective. If you're eating diseased animals, like more than likely that's going to affect you negatively in the future. So it took me a long time. It was like a very long journey. And for me, I like went vegan. It took after like I have endometriosis, so it took me a long time to fully get there. I had a really traumatic endo surgery. And after that, I was like, I need to make a massive change. And so my boyfriend at the time, who's now my husband, went vegan with me. And we were like, let's just see what happens. And he felt better than ever. I felt better than ever. I was able to get off all my meds. I was like going to the hospital every month before I went plant-based. And I haven't been back to the hospital since, which is just like so crazy to think about. It's not even like on my radar anymore. And it's made me a better chef, you know? And I think back to that one class that I had where it's just so much more exciting to cook plant-based, you know? Your meals aren't like, they're not filled with this one big animal protein. You're able to like make a meal with so many different other ingredients. And it's just so much more fun for me. So that's my long-winded answer to your question.
Yeah. No, I am in the food industry myself, and it is so rare to like lead a healthy life within that industry.
Yeah.
as you know, from the drinking to just the kind of excess of eating and eating
so
while you're on a 9-hour shift and just all the stresses that come with that. And it's just, it's so difficult to be healthy in that environment and make like really health conscious decisions.
Yeah.
But you said, until your health change ruined your life. Is that what you said? Explain what you meant by that.
Yeah. So I have been dealing with endometriosis since I was 11 years old. It was undiagnosed pretty much for most of my life.
Can you explain, especially for the men like myself, can you explain exactly what that is?
So endometriosis is a disease that essentially affects our periods and our menstrual cycle. And it's where a like cell, the endometrial cell, is something similar to that grows on the outside of your uterus. So it happens when we go through our periods, but it can cause like fibroids and cysts, and it can grow like, it can cause your bowel to like literally like form together. It can cause like all sorts of horrible problems, and it happens because we have our periods essentially. It's a very like under-researched, understudied problem that 1 in 10 women or people with periods go through. And it sucks. It's like literally the worst. And it's so hard to get diagnosed. It's like, you know, you get pretty much gaslighted from your doctors. Oh, you're fine. Everyone has period pain, blah, blah, blah. But they pretty much have said now that there's more research into it. They like say on the pain scale, it's pretty much like a woman going into labor every single time they have their period. So like that's endometriosis mm-hmm. pain. So it's crazy when you look at people with periods or women who go into labor who have endometriosis, if they're able to get pregnant, they're like, that was chill. Like that was nothing. I have endo. It's totally fine. I've never had a baby myself. I'm child free, but that's what I've heard. So yeah, it's a really intense disease. You know, there's not a lot of answers. The only real answers, medically speaking, are surgery. A lot of time they'll do hysterectomies, which is just super invasive and like completely life-changing, or hormone replacements and birth control, which are not a long-term solution. And so that's essentially what I was dealing with, was just like surgery after surgery, like lots of prescriptions, lots of painkillers, lots of Percocet and things like that. And it just got to the point that I couldn't work anymore, you know, like working as a chef, especially because I don't know how I was working as much as I was working, but I was working front of house, back of house, and in my own private chef business. And I was finding time to like party all the time, which I think also had to do with the industry and like being in chronic pain. And you know, it's all kind of like meshed together into one lifestyle. And I just like broke, basically. Like it just got to a point where I just couldn't do anymore. I couldn't go on. I like couldn't work. So eventually I became super, you know, I was broke basically. And I ended up having to move back home with my parents to figure it out, which was like a rough pill to swallow, coming from someone who's got like this booming career in San Francisco to like having to move back home to Boulder, Colorado with her mom and dad to like figure it out. But I'm really glad I did. And it kind of like helped blossom my career in a way I never thought I would. I kind of turned my endometriosis into my superpower, but yeah, it's rough stuff. It's something that I'll always deal with, you know, like having endo. I feel so much better now. I have a whole different lifestyle. I am constantly managing it. I'm not in chronic pain anymore. However, if I were to like go back to the lifestyle I was living before, my endo would just like full on just, you know, knock me out. So it's something that we have to constantly be aware of. And, you know, it's just part of my life. And that's fine. I think it's just part of, you know, the journey.
Yeah. Yeah. And how do you look at the diet and the lifestyle change as a tool to manage that? Like what you just said right there is kind of like what I would say for most, like, quote unquote, normal things that most of us live with.
Yeah.
Right. Like if I went a week, you know, going back to my old school high animal, mm-hmm. you know, diet that I used to eat, right, my arthritis would come back, my asthma would come back.
Right.
Like, so these things that we have kind of like in the past been diagnosed with,
mm-hmm.
Like, do we have them, or do we just, with our lifestyle changes, like cause them to, you know, resurface? And it's almost like, you know, like, how do you think about that? Because you essentially just explained that it's totally manageable and not really a huge factor in your life when you're dialed in on the, on the lifestyle front.
I mean, endo's hard because it's like we just don't know where it comes from. You know, there's like a lot of, from what I see and from the research that I've done, and like I'm just like constantly researching it because it's just like I'm trying to find holes all the time, especially because I've just had such poor medical care in the past. I'm just like, why is this so challenging for people? I think it has so much to do with our hormones and so much excess estrogen. So when we're looking at like meat consumption, dairy consumption, that's like so much excess estrogen. Not only that, you're not eating plant-based foods when you're eating a lot of meat and dairy. So like the plant-based foods, like raw fruits and vegetables, can actually help absorb estrogen. But not only that, there are so many chemicals in our lifestyle that can like turn into estrogen in our body. So when we're looking at like our cleaning products, our makeup products, our hair care, and it's hard for a lot of people to manage a lot of that, because if you, like, let's say you work in a hospital or you work in an airport or you work somewhere where there's constant chemicals around you all the time, you can't really control that exposure that you have. And I think another big part of that is stress as well. So I really like to look at like the different pillars of your lifestyle. Like, are you sleeping? Are you stressed? Are you having sex? Are you eating right? Like, are you drinking water? There's so many different things. And with endometriosis, I've really found that you have to focus on all of them, and medical intervention is necessary, because if you have endo and you have adhesions growing, no amount of lifestyle or diet is going to get rid of them. Like, you have to surgically remove them and then really work hard so that they don't grow back as quickly. And so that's the only difference about, I would say, like, endo is like, it's like all encompassing. It's not just our diet. You know, for instance, like, my dad is a great example. He has high blood pressure. So if he eats right and like doesn't drink beer, he doesn't have all the symptoms of high blood pressure and all the other things he deals with. Whereas for me, it's so much more than just like eating. It has everything to do with my whole lifestyle. Which can be really overwhelming to people. You know, it's like, okay, I have to change everything. But when you really look at it, it's like, you know, eating plant-based is such a great foundational layer, but it's really not enough, especially in our modern world where we're just all so stressed out all the time. You know, like, we're all super sleep deprived. We're all like putting toxic body wash on us with fragrances and red dye 40 and stuff. So there's a whole process to it. But yeah, I think that there's a lot of healing to be done. But I just wish it wasn't as hard for us, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. So the diet is a piece of the puzzle to the full picture. But yeah, it's like, completely agree. It's like, okay, you can eat, you know, a perfect whole food plant-based diet, but if you don't sleep and you're constantly stressed and worried about, you know, future things that haven't happened yet, and you have no connection with a partner or no intimacy in your life, like, all those things,
no support, like, yeah,
totally. yeah they're not going to, your diet's not going to like trump all of those other factors, right?
Yeah, totally. I mean, we just moved, actually, and when we were moving out, I realized that I had been living in mold. And I didn't know. And I was getting all these weird symptoms. And I was like, is this endo? Is this? I was getting migraines again. I wasn't getting migraines for years and years. And I was like, God, what is going on? Like, I thought I had a grip on this. And then as we were moving out, I found mold under the carpet. And I was like, oh, there it is. You know? So I think the thing to take away from this, from the listeners, is like, a lot of times we think we're crazy, or we think we're just like overreacting, or we think that, you know, but a lot of times you're not. A lot of times there is something going on that you just can't see, or you just don't know yet. And it's important to keep digging until you figure out what it is, because you're not crazy. Your symptoms are valid. Your pain exists. And that is like such a good takeaway, especially even for me. Like, I've been in this for so long, and I was like gaslighting myself because I was having these symptoms for years. I lived in this house for 5.5 years. And it just got worse and worse towards the end there, you know, because we had all this rain, we had flooding. It was like so dramatic here in San Diego. It was just so crazy. And so, you know, I was like, wow, I feel so validated that I'm not totally crazy. And these migraines and these things that I'm going through right now are actually for a reason, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I know you also work with people on this. So, like, what is step one for somebody that is struggling with endo? Like, yourself, like, where do you start? Like, you know, you mentioned it's like so many different factors it could be, right? Like, how do you go about helping a person with it?
I think it's like really looking at the whole person and really like having that person non-judgmentally look at themselves too. So the first thing I do is have them write down a super detailed food diary. So like what you're eating, how much water you're drinking, how you're feeling when you eat those things, how you feel when you wake up, what you eat right before bed. That alone can tell me so much about someone, because the food diary is also like, for instance, I did a food diary with a client like years ago. And she always has stuck out in my mind because she's like, I just don't know what's going on. I feel like I'm doing well, blah, blah, blah. And then I see her food diary and she's like, over the course of the day, she has like 7 cups of coffee. You know, she's not getting enough nutrients. She's clearly stressed. She goes to sleep super late. And like, there's these, and now we have all these tools, like the Oura Ring is awesome. We have at-home functional blood testing. Like, there's so many ways that we can kind of like really see the whole picture. But just doing a simple food diary that's super detailed, that's matched with how you're feeling, I can literally see like your full lifestyle and be like, okay, there's a lot of things that we could do to make you feel better tomorrow. You just have to be willing to, you know, do it and make the changes. And so, yeah, really like a non-biased, non-judgmental look at where you're actually at. Because you could easily be like, you know, oh, I'm working with this new person. I'm going to start eating really well for this week so she can be like super stoked to work with me. But it's like, I want to see what you're eating and how you're acting, what your stress level is on your worst week. Because more than likely, that's where we're going to find like the holes, and that's where we're going to find, you know, where you need the most support, and not when you're just feeling like motivated and like, you know, have all the good food in your fridge and all that stuff.
Yeah. And how do you see like medication in that process? Like, how do you toe the line between, hey, like you're not a victim of this thing. You yeah. can take actions to manage and or prevent it from coming back versus, okay, you know, maybe you need something on the medication front a little bit for maybe a little while.
Yeah. I mean, well, I think the biggest thing to remember is like, I'm not an MD and I work with a lot of doctors. Like I work with my clients' doctors or people who take my programs. We work with their doctors. And I think the biggest thing that I talk to them about is like, how can you be your own best health advocate? How can you walk into each doctor's appointment with a strong goal of what you're going to get out of the doctor's appointment? Because a lot of times, you know, whether we have like medical trauma or we're afraid to speak up or we're not feeling super confident, and I've been there, which is like why I think this is so important, is you walk into a doctor's office and you just shut down and you just like get the blood work or you get whatever, especially for women, like getting a pap smear is so awful, or like, you know, just so much to women's health that's just super like, you're just like, ugh, after that happens, you just don't want to talk to them. You're like, I just need to get out of here as quickly as possible. But it's important to realize that like they work with you. You are not working for them, or you're not susceptible to anything that they have to say. So it's important to do your research before you go in, be your own health advocate, because if you don't advocate for yourself, absolutely no one else can, you know? Your doctor can only do so much. And to just have confidence to say no or to ask questions. You know, for me, like I was on birth control for 16 years and I never asked questions. And once I started asking questions, I had a lot of really hard, uncomfortable conversations with my doctors because they're not used to people asking questions, you know, and to really being like, well, why are we still doing this? It's obviously not working. I want to change. And like having that little bit of pushback, I think is good for everybody because it makes your doctor think twice about why they are prescribing you that. It makes you think twice and be like, okay, like I do have some control here. And if you have a doctor that's just not budging, like high blood pressure is the perfect example. If you really want to heal your high blood pressure with, you know, diet and lifestyle and want your doctor to help you like slowly go off your meds because you need your doctor to do that. If they won't support you, you have to find somebody that will. And I think that's so important too, because we get so stuck in like, okay, this is my one doctor. Like this is all I got, but hopefully we can find doctors that are in network. I know insurance is like a whole other thing, but you know, hopefully we can find a medical team that can help us. And I think it's important too, to look at like the whole picture. So like I would just be someone that's part of your toolkit. Your acupuncturist is someone that's part of your toolkit. Your cookbooks are something that's also part of your toolkit. You know, you have all these, your doctor is someone, your naturopath, like your massage therapist, it's all people that are part of like your healing that's going to help you get to where you need to go. And I think a lot of times we just depend too much on the medical field thinking that it's going to get us everywhere, but they have a very specific job. They're here to treat you through medications, through surgery, to monitor your blood levels, and like it kind of stops there. So if you're looking for someone to help you implement and make it all make sense, you have to reach out to someone like me, or you have to maybe, if you want something more natural or want to try something different, go see a Chinese medicine doctor, but not to just depend on that one doctor, that one MD for everything. And I think that can help you question everything too, and to put you in a place of empowerment versus being the victim.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Well said. Do you think there is a link to birth control and endometriosis, and how has being on that and off that impacted your journey with it?
Yeah. I mean, it's such a hard conversation because, you know, the science says that like when you take birth control, you stop your period, which essentially stops all symptoms of endometriosis. But the problem that I have with this is it doesn't tackle the root cause and why it's happening. And a lot of times when you go on birth control, you might stop your period, which is stopping like cramping and like painful periods and stuff like that, but it might not be stopping your migraines, or it might make your cycle related anxiety like 10 times worse, right? Like it might cause all of these other problems to be exacerbated, where you're basically just swapping in one symptom out for another one. And so it's not really like looking at the root cause. It's not looking at the whole person. It's basically just being like, take this pill, here's a Band-Aid, and that's it. And sometimes it does really work for people, you know, like I can't knock that. Birth control obviously works for people. It's an amazing contraceptive. You know, I think it is definitely a place of privilege to say like, don't take birth control, because, you know, like having a pregnancy, having a child is such a big thing. And if you can't really count on men, no offense, to, you know, to take care of it, you know, you can't really trust them. So you have to like take care of it for yourself from a pregnancy standpoint. However, if we're talking just from like a full medical standpoint, if you're the only option you're ever given is birth control, you really have to look at that and think, do I want to heal the root cause? Do I want to figure out why this is happening? Do I want to feel better in 10 years? Because the reality is like, I got off birth control and my symptoms were worse than they ever were, you know? So I never really healed the root cause. I never really figured out what was going on. And not only that, then detoxing off birth control was a whole other thing, you know? It's like, you're trying to re-regulate. You're trying to figure out how you feel, what your weight looks like, what your skin looks like when you're not on it. It's hard to know who you are when you don't have these synthetic hormones in your body. So it's a very like person by person thing, but I really feel like we deserve more than just birth control as an option, because it's a good option. It can help prevent periods, which helps prevent pregnancy, which helps prevent some of the symptoms. But long term, it's just, it's not an option, you know, like maybe 1 or 2 years, 3, 4 years, sure. But like for me, I was being prescribed it for 16 years. And then on year 16, I was like, I'm done with this. And I know this happens to so many other people. And I got bullied in the doctor's office for saying I don't want to take it anymore. Like literally bullied. There was multiple people that came in to try to convince me. And I was like, you guys, like this isn't safe. Like the research shows that I shouldn't be on it more than 3 years consecutively or more than 11 years total. And I've been on it for 16 years. Like, can we have some sort of real conversation here about something else that can help me? So yeah, I think it's person by person, but it's definitely a Band-Aid and it doesn't heal the root cause. And if you're on birth control and you're just like eating whatever and you're super stressed out and you're just like not living an aligned lifestyle, I don't know, no matter what prescriptions you take, whether it's for anything, right? You just talked about how you have arthritis. Like it doesn't matter really what it is. If you're not like really working on healing it, no matter what medication you take, it's always just going to be a Band-Aid.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I know you talk a lot about as well, changing your core relationship with food.
Yeah.
What do you mean by that?
Man, I mean so many things.
It's a loaded question.
Yeah, I mean, it kind of just depends on like where you're at in your journey. It could be like cooking. You know, a lot of times people are like, I have no time to cook, or like, I am not inspired. And that happens to me too. Like a lot of times I don't have time. I mean, I cook for other people for a living, and like, you'd be surprised how much I don't cook for myself. So like, we all go through it, you know? But I think the idea is like, how bad do you want to feel good? And how can you make cooking something that you really enjoy? You know, like maybe you have to learn an entire new skill as an adult, which is hard as hell. You know, like I tried to learn how to surf as an adult, and that was one of the most humbling experiences of my life. But like, that's what happens with cooking. You have to just throw yourself in there and learn, you know, put on music, like get, it's such a sensory experience. You know, you smell like amazing things, you can taste as you go, you try new recipes, maybe they don't all work out, but it's all about learning, trial and error, and just like building that relationship to yourself through having that meditative practice of cooking. And the more you get to know your food through cooking, the more you're going to get to know your body and the more you're going to realize like how certain foods make you feel, because you're going to know exactly what's in your food. I think the problem is when we're eating takeout all the time or fast food or eating at restaurants, we don't feel good and we don't know why, because we don't know what's in the food that we're eating. But if we're cooking all of our own food, we can be like, hey, like the last like five meals have had dairy in them. And then I had a dairy-free meal tonight and like I feel so much better, you know, and that's how we can really understand our bodies and have this different relationship with food, because we're awake to it. We're like fully aware of what's happening, what's going into our bodies, where the food's coming from. You know, like when you go to the grocery store, you can look on the back of the package or you can look on the sticker and see where the food was grown. And like, there's so many different little things that I think people don't really think about. People just kind of think like, oh, I'm just going to check it off the to-do list. And that's that. I'm going to move on with my life. But eating is not only one of the most primal things that we can do, but it's one of the most intimate ways that we can connect with ourselves to really move into the life that we want to live, to be that person that we want to be, to feel the way we want to feel, to show up for our families, to show up in work, to show up for ourselves. And I think food is such an important baseline of that, because it fuels us. It literally fuels our brains, which makes us either like happy or have anxiety or whatever. You know, I have this whole series called the Anxiety Antidote Series on TikTok, because everyone has anxiety. Like literally everybody has anxiety these days, which I mean, I don't blame you. We live in a really crazy time. But there's so much that you can do to support your body through what you're eating, for anxiety, you know? So that's, I think that's what I mean.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I'm curious to understand, you mentioned like showing up for your family and kind of, I think what you meant was putting yourself in kind of the best state to best interact and be your best self around, you know, your loved ones.
Yeah.
How has that changed for you with food over the years?
Yeah, I mean, someone that was dealing with chronic illness, I also had like a lot of anger. So I would get super angry, like with me and my parents, I would get so angry at them. My dad's also like a New Yorker, so it's kind of like how we communicated. But I took it to like, you know, an extreme, because I just didn't feel good. You know, I was just so frustrated, especially as a teenager. I mean, if you look at the rates of like depression, anxiety, suicide, and young teen girls who are on birth control, it's like super alarming. It's like super alarming. And I was on one of the strongest birth controls as a teenager, and none of my doctors kind of batted an eyelash or whatever. Kind of going back to the birth control thing for a second, but I was angry at my parents. And that's kind of how my reactions happened up until I would say, like, until I went plant-based, I would say, because I was hurt, you know, I was in chronic pain. I was like relying on these medications that would dull who I was just so that I could work and make money and like feel somewhat like a normal person, which I didn't even really know what that felt like at the time. And so for me personally, like having this new relationship with food, having this new relationship with health and lifestyle, and like really just like doing the work, doing that hard work to get to know myself on a different level made me nicer. Like it just made me a nicer person, like better to be around. I didn't have as much of a temper. I was more compassionate to, you know, my friends and my family, and I wasn't as sure. And I was like, you know, I'm still not perfect, but I just completely changed. Like my parents and I have like the most beautiful relationship now, which we didn't have for so long. And I think a lot of that was also them recognizing that like I was in pain. I wasn't just like a total terror, you know, like I was not feeling good. And I think like the compassion kind of goes both ways. But yeah, so that was for me, it was just made me a better person. And I really see that with like my clients and friends and family, even my husband. You know, my husband has had a tumultuous relationship with his family, and him eating this way. I mean, in general, I find that when you go vegan, you just become more compassionate in general. Like you see things just differently. I think you see the world through a different, like more compassionate lens. So I think that's like a big part of it too. But you know, my husband feels better than ever. Like he's more hardcore of a vegan than I am, if that's even possible. And he just feels so good. He's a surfer. He's 6'4". So he's a ton of food. Like it's impossible to keep food stocked in our house. But he's just a happier guy, you know, like he's been able to work through his trauma and his bullshit because he just didn't have a cloudy mind so that he was able to do that. And now he's like, you know, has a great relationship with his mom and like things are just better now, you know? And I think a lot of that has to do with like just really doing that self-work and healing yourself. And I get so many comments from people being like, oh, I really want to eat this way or I really want to take care of myself, but like, I just don't have time. You know, I cook for my kids or my husband and whatever, like my wife isn't into it. And I think you have to decide, like, is that a good enough excuse? You know, like, is that really a good enough excuse? Or can you make time to heal yourself? Because at the end of the way, are you really there for your kids if you feel like shit all the time? Are you really being like the best spouse you can be if you don't feel good? And for me, it's always a work in progress. Like, we're always trying to figure out like how I can feel better, how he can feel better. But like, I think when we really spend that time to take care of like us, we then have the capability to really be there in the best way possible for the people around us.
Yes, drop the mic, please.
That matcha's hitting good today.
I love that. I love that. And I will say, you know, this is episode, I think right around 200 the Green Make Green podcast over the past 5 years. And the amount of people when I've had plant-based guests that talk about like that calmness, I call it an ease, an opposite of dis-ease, an ease.
I love that.
That happens when you change what you put in your body. And I've kind of tried to put my finger on what that is and whether it's just, you know, just the health benefits of the food you're putting in your body, the new perspective of where your food comes from, the connection to it, or if there's an element of simply like the energy transfer that used to take place from those animals that you used to put in your body that lived these lives of, as I say, dis-ease, that you are then consuming. And that, I think, you know, in my many years of thinking about it, I think that is the reality. When we eat meat in this country, we are eating another being that lived a miserable, miserable life. And you want to talk about anxiety and you want to talk about stress and you want to talk about disease. And it's like you are consuming that. And that's how I think about it.
Oh my gosh. I literally wrote that in my book because I couldn't agree more. You know, when you're eating a petrified animal, you're eating that, like all that stress. Okay, think about when you're stressed out or like if you have knots in your body or you've been sick for a long time and you've just been laying in bed and your body just feels like shit and you just really feel like, you know, people talk about this all the time, body workers, Chinese medicine doctors, how you store all of that stress and trauma and anxiousness in your body. Like it's all there. So that doesn't change.
On a cellular level.
On a cellular level. Exactly. So that all that trauma that you have is stored in your body, which is why it's so important to, you know, go to therapy or go through that trauma or be able to, like what we were just talking about, be that best person, because you're literally getting that trauma out of your body. Unfortunately, these farm animals, that's all they ever know. They never have that chance to heal or, you know, like you see, like most of the chickens that are consumed never see the sun. Like they never see the sun. And so you're really consuming that darkness and the just like that anxiety and that depression. And when you're eating that three times a day, every single day for the main source of your calories, I don't care how much protein you're getting. It doesn't matter at this point. What you're getting is more of this energetic exchange, not to mention the amount of antibiotics and like prescriptions that these animals also have to take in order to survive in these conditions, which again is 95% of all of the meat that is on our table. So I don't care if you come back to me and you say, well, I hunt my own meat who, you know, they live happy lives. What do you eat when you're out at a restaurant? You know, I'm sure like that doesn't apply. If you're eating meat, you're just eating meat. So, you know, okay, maybe you hunt your own meat and like that's what you eat at home, but I'm sure your ethics don't also, I'm gonna air quote ethics on that one, don't, you know, go into when you're at a restaurant, because then you're just eating petrified meat at the restaurant. You know, there's like such a thin line there that I totally agree. It has so much to do with everything. And that's why, I mean, I think about that with dairy all the time. because dairy is such attack. It's such an attack on the feminine. It's such an attack on like mothers, you know, like these, they're moms. They're moms that are forcibly impregnated. Their babies get stolen from them. And then they're hooked up to a machine. It's so funny. I got, not to go on like the craziest tangent, but I have the Breaking Up with Dairy series on my TikTok that always is just going viral. It's so wild. And one of the videos the Dairy Farmers Association of America got a hold of, which was like one of the most stressful weeks of my life, honestly. And all of these dairy farmers were like stitching my reel or my TikTok. And they were like, look at all my cows. Like they're mooing, just like rubbing up against these machines. Like they love to get milked. And I'm just sitting here with my head in my hands and I'm like, no, you literally took their babies away from them. Who would be drinking their milk? And now their udders, like as a woman, like if your baby's not drinking your milk, your boobs get engorged.
You're in pain.
You're in pain. So the same thing's happening with these cows, but they're mooing because they're literally desperate for you to like relieve them. They're not saying, oh my God, I love that you are putting me on this machine and that you're taking my milk. But that is literally the mindset of the dairy farmers. But when you look at these moms, like, I just feel so bad for them, you know? Like, I feel so sad for them because they have to go through this over and over and over again until they then get taken to slaughter. And I think that's, like, such an important thing to think about. If you are vegetarian, you're still eating dairy. I think dairy is one of the most cruel industries ever. Like, dairy should be abolished because of how cruel it is. Dairy was never ever something that was meant to be put on a factory farm level. Like when people started, you know, milking their cows back in the day before technology, before any of the stuff, it was out of necessity, right? Like it was out of the fact that maybe the cow did have extra milk and it's still raising its baby, you know, but it was never something that was meant to be done at such a high volume level to now like all the humanity is just completely stripped out of it. And it's wild. I could talk about that for like for days, but
yeah. I mean, not to mention it's just intended for a totally different species and a species that is, you know, 10, mm-hmm. 20 times the body weight of a human being and all the different, you know, shit that you're getting pumped with as a human, that, you know, is intended for a baby calf that is going into your body. And then you worry, and then you wonder why you're gaining weight or have acne or all these things. Mm-hmm. It's so obvious.
Yeah. It's so obvious. For sure. But here's the problem: is like dairy is so addicting. It's so addicting, and we have been fed. You know, I don't know how old you are, but I'm a child of the '90s. Like we were fed the fact that dairy is what you needed to survive. Like it was a literal like fed to us for survival. Like you are gonna, like there was that one commercial where like they're like, oh mom, do I need to drink my milk? And she's like, they're like, Mr. whatever across the street doesn't drink his milk. And then it like goes over to him and he's like mowing the lawn and then his like arms break off, you know, and then the kids start screaming and like chugging their milk. Like that was what we were fed times like a million. And it's crazy too, because dairy is the only advertisement that is allowed in public schools, which is just like crazy to me.
Yeah.
Wild
absolutely,
stuff.
Absolutely bananas.
But I am like...
Well, I want to...
Oh, sorry. What were you going to say?
No, you go.
Oh, I was just going to say, I am going very in on the Breaking Up with Dairy front. Like, hint, hint. So if you guys want to know, like, what's coming next, I'm about to do a really big announcement. So that's going to be, like, one of my main focuses for the next couple years is helping people get off dairy and really trying to, like, be part of that cultural shift of getting people off of dairy for, like, so many reasons. So... if you're listening and you have a friend that really needs to get off dairy, just send them my way.
Awesome. That's awesome. Before we wrap up here, I do want to, you've been hinting at your TikTok series and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Tell us what you're sharing mostly on social for people listening. And then also if you would, as somebody that obviously like all of us started from zero and now you have this massive following across different platforms, maybe a few tips for people listening that have a a cause or a passion that they want to put out to the world.
That's actually one of my favorite things to talk about. Okay, so first off, on social media, I share like a lot of recipes. People like love my recipes. Like they love the way I do them, which I find to be so awesome and funny. But yeah, I do tons of recipes. So there are hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of free recipes on my blog, and I essentially just make those recipes into videos so you can kind of like learn how to do it. And I also do like live cooking classes through Instagram subscriptions as well. So I do it like on the live. It's only $5 a month and people love those. So that's a lot of the content that you kind of expect from me. I talk about women's health on there a lot too and just like random funny vegan humor as well, but it's mainly recipes and just like cooking tips, and I'm really just trying to get people inspired through my story and just, you know, in the kitchen as well. And then if you're trying to start a platform, I think there's a couple things to remember. Absolutely nobody knows what they're doing. So don't let imposter syndrome get in the way, you know, like when I started my podcast, I started it on the voice memo app on my phone. I had no idea what I was doing. I listened back to the first episodes and it's, I don't know if you feel the same way, but it's just so cringy. Like I'm just like, oh, what was she doing? But I kept it up, you know, for humility. but yeah, you just realize that no one knows what they're doing. So everyone's winging it when they first start out. It's just, and the thing that's important too is like no one's gonna see your first couple posts. So if you're just starting out and you're wanting that first post to be perfect, like just ignore all that, like that urge to make it perfect. Just, it's better to have things up than to have nothing up at all. And just post consistently, be super consistent, use trending audios, follow the rules a little bit with each app. You know, like every app has its own little rule book, which is super annoying. Like I wish it was a little bit easier, but that's okay. And have fun with it. Don't judge yourself. You know, respond to comments, like get involved with your community. Like if you have, let's say 200 followers or 2000 followers, don't look at my following now and be like, oh my God, this is nothing. Imagine every single one of those people in your house listening to what you have to say, even 200 people, even 20 people, you know, that's like 20 people who are taking the time to like watch your reel or comment or send you a DM. And I think if you give those people all of your attention, more people are going to come and pay attention to what you're doing. And then I think the final thing is just focusing on the quality of your content. So if you don't have a lot of followers, you're trying to get to that next level, make sure you have a good camera, make sure you're shooting in natural lighting, make sure, I always say like, is it beautiful? Is it shareable? Or is it educational? And if you like have one of those three things, someone's gonna like it, someone's gonna share it. I always tell the story of like my cookbook, the first book deal that I got. I like didn't have a big following at the time. I think I had like 11,000 followers just on Instagram. I was on no other social media apps. And I posted something that didn't get a lot of likes and I was about to delete it, but a publisher saw it through a hashtag, reached out to me and offered me a book deal from this random post. Wow. So you like never know who's watching. And it's been 3 years since then and everything's changed. But all it takes is like that one thing to change your life. And you never know when that's going to pop up. It could be today. It could be tomorrow. It could be next year. But you're never going to get there if you're not consistently just posting and just putting yourself out there on the internet. And it's super vulnerable. Like it's a very vulnerable place to be. Like getting attacked by the dairy industry of America was like the worst thing ever. But I still kept posting about dairy-free living because I believe in that so much. And I think we need more people realizing that it's not about them, it's about the mission. So I started posting more when I realized it wasn't even about me. If people wanted to attack me for how I looked or how I dressed or how I talked, it doesn't matter because they're totally missing the point, you know? It's about something so much bigger than me. And once you take yourself out of it, like it's easy. You just get out there, you spread that message, you do your thing, and the rest will just naturally, I feel like, fall into place.
I love that. I love that. Give us the handles, the website, all that.
Yeah, totally. So my website is www.chefbae.kitchen. On my website, like I said, I have hundreds of free recipes. I have my 14-day plant-based challenge, which is only $1 a day. I've had thousands of people sign up for that. It's one of the best ways to kind of just get into the plant-based lifestyle. Or if you're vegan already and you're sick of eating processed foods, it's a really good way to like kind of ditch processed foods and kind of go into a more whole food plant-based kind of lens of it. I also have my course called the Period Liberation Protocol, which is everything that we talked about today. And I have like meal plans on there, cycle syncing, like all the good stuff. I talk about how to detox your lifestyle, how to open up your detox pathways. And that's on my website as well. What else? I'm on TikTok at chef_bae. Same with Instagram. I'm on YouTube at Chef Bae, Pinterest, Chef Bae. It's B-A-I. And my podcast. Oh yeah, I have a podcast. It's called The Plant Remedy. I absolutely love it. I've been able to interview some of my idols in the plant-based world. It's been the best thing ever. And I do a lot of solo episodes on there as well. I do a lot of Q&As. So the podcast is available everywhere. You can listen to a podcast, basically. And yeah, I think that's it. Oh, and I have a cookbook too. One more thing. My cookbook is called
You're Doing Too Much, Chef Bae.
Oh my God, that's what everyone says to me. I'm such a nutcase. But yeah, I have a cookbook. It's called Cook, Heal, Go Vegan. And that's available everywhere books are sold as well.
That's awesome. I'm kidding. You're an absolute force.
Thanks.
Keep going. I've loved following and will continue to follow and rooting
Thanks.
For you. And thank you for all the awesome stuff you put out and all the things you do to help people lead a healthier life. Times I've related is your